Hi, I'm Michael Feinstein, and this is the Song Travels Podcast. Each week on Song Travels, my guest and I share an hour of conversation and music. The Song Travels Podcast features some of my favorite moments from the interview. To listen to full episodes online, visit npr.org, and for more podcasts, subscribe at itunes.com/songtravels. Hi, I'm Michael Feinstein. My guest today is jazz pianist Barbara Carroll. Regarded as New York's first lady of jazz piano, she was noted by critic Leonard Feather as, quote, the first girl to play bop piano. Her career has spanned 7 decades and includes everything from appearances on Broadway to performances in concert halls and on festival stages worldwide. She had a remarkable 24-year run at the Bemelman's Bar in the Carlyle Hotel, and in 2003, she received the Mary Lou Williams Lifetime Achievement Award. Now in her 90s, she performs regularly in New York with bassist Jay Lenhart. Barbara Carroll, welcome to Song Travels.
It's lovely to be here, Michael.
Barbara, I've known you for a number of years, and it is always a joy to hear you perform because what you do is so amazingly spontaneous. When I come to hear you, I always know that I'm going to hear things I've never heard before. You never do the same thing twice. If you play a tune, you do it in different tempos, different styles. It is a fearlessness in you that I find so wonderful and so intoxicating. What is it that drives you?
I love the word fearlessness. I think that part of playing jazz is the freedom to play the same songs differently each time. And that's what I love to do. I love to sit down at the piano and experiment, explore. And that's the fun of it for me. I've liked playing the piano since I was 4 years old, so what can I tell you?
Well, that is very clear. Where are you from?
Worcester, Massachusetts.
Worcester.
Mm-hmm. Worcester. When I was a kid, they used to say, "Nothing is Worcester than Worcester." But that isn't true. Worcester was a wonderful place in which to grow up because it was close to Boston. And there were so many schools, so many universities, so much culture, if you will, in that area. So I was lucky to grow up in Worcester. And I grew up in a family that was very supportive of what I wanted to do, which, of course, was to play music. And my two older sisters were given piano lessons and violin lessons and all that stuff, but they didn't care about practicing. You know the routine. So Finally, my family said, enough of this. We're not going to go for any more lessons. Then I came along, and, of course, I wanted to play. I wanted to study. But by that time, the circumstances were such that money was very difficult because that was in the 30s, and that was the time of the Great Depression, and right. It wasn't so easy to have money on hand for music lessons and all the goodies of life. But anyway, I did start studying classical piano. I was about 8 years old, and I had a teacher who was very sympathetic to what I like to do, which is not only play what was on the printed page, but play what was in my head. In other words, she allowed me to experiment, and she was wonderful.
How lucky to find a teacher like that.
Yeah, unfortunately, she got married and moved away, but nevertheless, she was my first teacher, and it was very important to me that she was what she was.
Well, before we go any further, I'd like to get to some music, because you're going to play a number of things for us today, and I'm so happy about that. Bill Evans is somebody who has influenced not only every pianist, but many singers as well, having reinvented the way we listen to popular songs. And I believe you wish to play something by him?
Yes. Bill wrote a number of waltzes, and one of them was called Very Early, and I'd like to play that for you now.
All right. Here it is, our guest Barbara Carroll performing Very Early. Thank you. That is lovely, Barbara.
Thank you, Michael.
Has your passion for music led you places you never ever thought you'd go?
Yes, it certainly has. You know, when I was a kid, I was maybe about 13 years old. My father, who was so wonderful, I had the best parents in the world. I remember one night, his having a talk with me and saying, I know you have talent. I know there are things you could do. And if you study and work hard, your career can take you to places you've never been, and you can meet people you would never meet otherwise, and you can have experiences that would never happen to you otherwise. So he said, stick with it, or words to that effect. And I know that he was absolutely right.
Now, when did you come to New York?
I left Worcester and went to Boston for a while and went to the New England Conservatory of Music. And I began working in clubs, nightclubs in Boston, the Mayfair and the Latin Quarter and so forth. So, you know, in those days, Michael, I'm sure you're aware of this, the big nightclubs would always have two bands. They would have a show band, which would be maybe 8 or 10 pieces. They would play the show and they would play for dancing. And then there was a smaller group, usually a rumba band, about 4 pieces, right?
Was that called the relief band?
The relief band, exactly. And they would play when the big band took a rest. So I was with the relief band. Now, needless to tell you, I was the only chick piano player. Let the chick piano player take a chord. You know, it was like that. And I was a kid, you know. But I played all those places, and it was a wonderful experience. I may tell you that I learned more rumbas and boleros when I was in my teens. But what I really wanted to do was come to New York. I wanted to get my 802, local 802 musician's card. That was my dream, because then I knew I could work in New York City.
Right.
So I did, and I came to New York, and my first job was on 52nd Street.
Oh, my goodness. Well, before we continue with that story, I'd like to ask you to play another song that is kind of a staple of 40s pop classics, No Moon at All.
Yes, that was a good song. It was written by Red Evans and Dave Mann.
Here it is, our guest, Barbara Carroll. Our guest, Barbara Carroll, performing No Moon at All. I love the way that bridge, da da ba ba da. There's something that just kind of swings into it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Lovely, lovely. So you arrive in New York, and it's a very fertile time for jazz.
It was a wonderful time for jazz because it was the beginning of the bebop era.
And how did you feel about bebop when you first heard it?
Wonderful, excited. Bebop was an extension of jazz. It was a more complex form of jazz. People like Thelonious Monk and Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker, all those people contributed so much to the bebop era. So when I got to New York, I met an agent who told me that if I auditioned for him, he told me that if I could get a trio together, he could book me into the Downbeat Club opposite Dizzy Gillespie's big band.
Wow.
Well, you can imagine I was in heaven. I mean, just the thought of it. And I must say I was very brave because I did get a trio. I got a wonderful trio of a guitarist named Chuck Wayne, who was really great, and a bass player, Clyde Lombardi, And we went into the Downbeat Club, alternating with Dizzy Gillespie's big band, which consisted of John Lewis at the piano, O.C. Johnson on drums, Ray Brown on bass, James Moody on tenor, and so forth and so on. I mean, just the best musicians around. So when they would finish their set, then we would go up and play. I don't know how I had the nerve to do it, but I did. And what an education it was.
And what was it like being a female instrumentalist in a male-dominated field?
I suppose it was like being a female anything in those days. In those days, there weren't many female doctors or lawyers or architects or whatever. And there were not many female jazz musicians. In fact, hardly any. As opposed to now, I mean, there's nothing strange about having a woman doctor as your physician or a lawyer. And, you know, so things have changed for the better, I must say. But when I was playing, when I was starting out, there were very, very few. In fact, my mother's friends used to say, how can you let her hang out with those? She didn't use the words hang out, but how can you let her play with those awful jazz musicians, you know? Anyway,
now was this past,
I survived it.
Yes, indeed, very well. Was this past the time of the all-girl bands like Ina Ray Hutton and
this such? Was, yes, this was after Ina Ray Hutton.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so, but that was kind of a novelty, wasn't it? That was not regarded seriously, no matter how good they were.
No, it was not. And there were some good musicians in that band.
Yes. Well, nightclubs, who were the owners of these clubs? Were they owned by the mobs, or is there a generalization of these joints? Were they joints? Some must have been classy, some must have been elegant, and some not.
Well, that's very true. Some were elegant and some were not. But at the beginning, the clubs on 52nd Street were clubs that had formerly been speakeasies. You know what I mean,
right,
by
leftovers.
When you couldn't buy liquor, and then there was
Prohibition era,
exactly,
which the tide turned in the early 30s.
So there were many clubs on 52nd Street where the jazz they had been formerly speakeasies, and the basements of these clubs became the Three Deuces, the Downbeat Club, Leon Annette's, the Famous Door, etc. All the places where Errol Garner and Art Tatum and Charlie Parker, Miles Davis, and all those wonderful people played. And you're asking about the owners. Well, let me put it this way. I preferred not to know who the owners were. They were always very pleasant to me, and that was it. I never became involved with them. But I would suspect that there may have been some unsavory influences there. Should we put it that way?
And did black and white mix freely? Was it a very free place? What was that like?
Yes, there was racial mixture there, because musicians were always racially more integrated than other people. Not as much as there should have been, though. And even today, one can see in this country that the integration, or whatever you want to call it, the mixture of people, is not what it should be. But in those days, there were black people and white people who attended the jazz clubs and who were jazz fans. I remember one night at intermission, I was standing outside the Downbeat Club, and Charlie Parker came along, whom I knew slightly. Of course, you must remember that I was a kid, and I was so impressed with these people, and I adored them so much. And we were standing there, and a young woman came walking toward us, and he said to me, he said, "Oh, here comes Sassy." Now, Sassy was Sarah Vaughan. That was the nickname for Sarah Vaughan. And a lot of people are not aware of the fact that Sarah Vaughan, in addition to being the marvelous singer she was, also played piano. So he said to me, "I think you two chick piano players should know one another." So as she approached us, he introduced me to Sarah Vaughan, which was a very exciting moment for me.
When did you start singing?
I always knew the words to everything because my sisters were big fans of the popular songs of the day, and at home they were always singing. But anyway, I started singing, I suppose, when I began playing at the Carlisle, because I was playing solo piano there. Oh. And when you're playing solo piano, people say, would you play that song for me? Would you sing it, please? You know, and so you become brave. I understand that's how Nat Cole started singing, too, because he had a trio in which he only played piano, and people used to request him to sing.
Huh.
So that's when I began singing. I mean, I don't consider myself a singer, but I do love lyrics. So I admire what you do so much,
being able to
sing lyrics intelligently and interpret them and get the message across is something that I'm in awe of.
Oh, my. I'd love it if you'd sing something for us now.
Well, there's a song that Harold Arlen wrote, I Wonder What Became of Me from St. Louis Woman, Harold Arlen being one of my all-time favorite songwriters, as I'm sure he's one of yours.
Yes.
Everybody's. So I would like to make an attempt to sing that.
All right, and it's lyrics by Johnny Mercer.
And lyrics by Johnny Mercer, of course.
Oh, boy, well, here we go. I Wonder What Became of Me.
Lights are bright, piano's making music all the night, and they pour champagne just like it was rain. It's a sight to see, but I wonder what became of me.
You've been listening to the Song Travels podcast. To stream the full hour of this program, visit npr.org, and thank you for listening. I'm Michael Feinstein, host of Song Travels. You can find more information on our Facebook page at facebook.com/songtravels.